Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. We're broadcasting live from the Chadwick Arboretum plant sale on the Ohio State University campus. It's right at the intersection of Lane Avenue and Fred Taylor Drive. For more information, check out the link on our website at WOSU.org/allsides. We're here until noon, so join us and check out all the great plants, flowers, herbs, succulents, and everything in between, and lots of other vendors. We're talking this hour about one of our environment's best friends, the bee. Bees and other pollinators play an essential role in our environment, and they're crucial to the multi-billion dollar agriculture industry. But bee populations have been declining, threatened by pressure from pesticides, shrinking natural habitats, and climate change. Beekeepers and scientists are working to understand and combat the problem. So joining us now is Vice President of the Ohio State Beekeepers Association, Terry Lieberman-Smith. Welcome to the show.
Thank you for having us here.
And entomologist with Bee Lab at OSU, Reed Johnson. Welcome back, Reed.
Thanks.
I mentioned some of the reasons behind the disappearances. I mean, in some ways, they're sort of theoretical. No one's absolutely sure. No one's absolutely connected the dots. Right, Reed?
No, it's still kind of a mystery why the bees were disappearing and continue to disappear. You know, it was first reported back in 2006, and we still don't know why they're disappearing.
What do we know about what has gone away? What's left?
Well, we know most about honeybees because there are people keeping track of them, obviously. There's another, you know, thousands of other bee species out there that people don't keep track of, and we just assume that some of them are probably disappearing.
They're
as
also
well.
Pollinators.
Oh, absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, why do we keep track of honeybees and not other things?
Well, because there's beekeepers that keep track of them. And there's no beekeepers for all these other bees, generally, because they live in a hole in the ground or in a stem somewhere, and there's nobody keeping tabs on them.
This is not just about the production of honey either, right?
No, I mean, I love honey, and honey's
yeah,
a great
sure.
thing.
Yeah, sure, honey good.
But bees, actually, their major contribution is in the pollination of the food crops. So there's a lot of foods that we eat that would not be possible without bee pollination. Almonds are the top of the list, but here in Ohio, it's the cucumbers and the melons, apples, other fruits but we really depend on the bees to pollinate them so that farmers can produce these delicious foods.
Terry, what about that? I mean, they keep track of honeybees because beekeepers keep track of honeybees. That's what you sort of, what's the word I'm searching for? You know, you domesticate them in a
They're
way.
They're managed.
Considered right.
managed colonies. Those are the ones that our beekeepers keep track of over the years. For hundreds of years, there have been beekeepers. And even in the population of beekeepers today, they will tell you that what used to be colonies that would produce 150 pounds of excess honey, which is what they would take off, only produce these days maybe 30 to 40 pounds per colony because the forage just is not there anymore.
So that's a different thing because they're just not able to collect enough pollen to produce the honey.
Pollen and nectar.
Nectar,
right.
Okay.
The issue is what had been good forage is now parking lots or condominiums, and nothing is being planted in its place. It would be like if we went to the grocery store and half the store was gone.
As far as the honeybee population goes, what do you know about what's left? I mean, what's been the loss there?
For this year, the rumors have anywhere from 75 to 80% colony mortality, which meant if a beekeeper started off with 100 colonies, they would have 15 colonies left.
When bees go away, do they go away by the colony or do the colonies diminish?
The colonies basically lose enough population over time for whatever reason, whether it's mites, whether it's pesticides, whether it's poor nutrition, and they just can't feed the new generation. And they dwindle to the point where they just cannot survive the winter. They're just not healthy enough to survive any of the viruses. It's like humans. When we're healthy, we can overcome a cold that our neighbor sneezed, and we're okay still. But if we're eating junk food or just not a rounded
taking care
diet
of ourselves, right?
That sneeze can become bronchitis and can become pneumonia. So without that good forage out there, without the good nutrition and the colonies dwindling, they just can't overcome any of the other stressors that they're facing.
You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. We're broadcasting live today from the grounds of the Chadwick Arboretum plant sale on the Ohio State University campus, right at the intersection of Lane Avenue and Fred Taylor Drive. If you're happening by, drop by and join us here. We'll be here for 2 hours. For more information, check out the link at our website at WOSU.org/allsides. We're talking about bees right now, what they mean to our environment and other pollinators as well. Bees we keep track of, honeybees we keep track of, all the other pollinators, no one's really sure what's been lost in the shuffle over the years. If you have a question or comment, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org. And if you're at the sale right now, come on down. We have tables and picnic tables, and you can come down and join us and check out the show. We'd love to have you. Again, the number's 614-292-8513 or email us at allsides@wosu.org. Reed Johnson, so we know about honeybees. Do we know anything? I mean, let me ask you this. Is there any evidence out there at all about why this is happening?
About why it's happening?
Uh-huh.
Well, there's three main lines of thought. The first is this nutritional issue, which Terry talked about, that there just aren't as many flowers out in the landscape, and bees need flowers to survive. That's where they get their pollen and nectar. Number two would be the diseases, which are these, you know, bees get sick just like people and other animals do, and there's all sorts of bee viruses that are probably taking out honeybees, but probably taking out some of these other bees as well. And then number three is, of course, pesticides and insecticides are designed to kill insects, and all of these bees and other pollinators are generally insects, and the insecticides have the potential to kill them as well.
Are managed hives, the managed honeybee hives, are those any healthier?
Probably not.
Why not? I mean, if they're not, so you don't really take care of them. You just, what do you do, Terry?
Well, actually, beekeepers love to take care of their bees. They try to make sure that their locations all have good forage, have good water. They monitor their hives and check to see the level of pests in their hive, because sometimes the level of pests, like the varroa, will indicate a level of viruses that you can't necessarily see. So beekeepers actually, just like a gardener tends their garden, a beekeeper tends their bees. Make sure that the colonies all have enough space. Make sure the colonies don't have too much space because pests will come in. Making sure that they're in an area where the forage is good.
Okay, so then, Reed, why aren't they healthier?
Well, because they've got all these problems with,
that the beekeeper can't control.
Can try to put them in a good spot, but there just aren't as many good spots as there used to be with good forage around. And the diseases and pesticides are very hard for any beekeeper to control because the bees, they don't stay at home. They forage over, 3 miles away from the colony. So if you draw a circle with a radius of 3 miles around a colony, that's the area over which these bees are traveling, and they can get into a lot of trouble over that area.
Very easily.
It's kind of a symbiotic relationship then,
yes,
between the beekeepers and, say, an orchard owner.
Exactly, because with the orchard owner, the orchard only needs the bees maybe 2 weeks while the trees are actually in bloom. Mm-hmm. So they work a relationship where they call the beekeeper to come and bring the bees in during bloom time or right before bloom time. But they also need to get the bees out of there because there are lots of chemicals that are used in many of the growing areas, and we don't want to expose our bees to those chemicals because the bees don't know that the tree was sprayed with powdered 7 or other fungicides.
Whatever.
Right.
Yeah.
And they will get into that. If the bee is truly ill, it won't come back to the colony. But if it's not particularly sick, but it's got some chemicals with it, it will bring it back, and that can infect the whole colony.
So a bee, if it's sick, it won't come back to the colony?
Usually not.
Because it knows?
Mm-hmm. The hive is a unit, and the minute the bee emerges from its cell, it knows exactly what it needs to do. It cleans its cell. And throughout its life, it works for the betterment of the colony. So if bees are sick and they're aware of it, many times they will leave and so as to protect the health of the colony.
Huh.
It's very fun and very unique. And when people see a honeybee, sometimes they'll pick it up. They'll want to take it home and, you know, keep it for a while. It can't live without the rest of its family.
And are all pollinators that way, Reed?
Most of them are not. Most bees are solitary. They live by themselves in a hole in the ground. Right now, you can probably find bees coming out of holes in the ground in yards. I saw one just across the street here, I think. And most of them are like that, like the carpenter bees that you see, or bumblebees are the exception. They also are a social bee.
A unit type
of unit.
Thing, yeah.
But they're different in that the queen survives the winter by herself, and then she founds a new colony in the spring and builds it up over the course of the summer, and then it dies again in the fall. Whereas honeybees are essentially perennial. They are this social unit all through the year, and it's really unique, and it's amazing biology that I love to study.
Does the fact that they're like that make them more vulnerable?
I mean, winter is really hard, and other bees, they go into some kind of hibernation to survive the winter. But honeybees, they stay active through the entire winter. And actually, that's when most honeybees die, is over the winter.
Huh.
Just because, obviously, there's nothing blooming in the winter.
And it's cold.
And it's cold, and they have to keep the temperature in that colony up high enough so they don't freeze to death. And it's hard. I mean, that's the reason they store all this honey, is so that the bees themselves can eat it over this long winter, so they have something to survive on.
And one of the other things that we didn't necessarily talk about is the genetic diversity. Many years ago, before I got into beekeeping, the tracheal mite came through and went from coast to coast and took out a huge swath of population. So we're left with a much smaller, less diverse gene pool. And then when you have the varroa mite and all of its issues that it brings along, all of its baggage, and, you know, the research says, what, like 60% maybe of the population was wiped out with the tracheal mite. And I don't know, what are the conversations with as far as the population demise percentage-wise due to varroa?
Well, I mean, certainly lots of wild bees died, but beekeepers kept them alive because they killed the varroa mites and they just managed their bees more. So, I mean, that's really the story of beekeeping, is that honey beekeepers still have bees alive, but they just have to put a lot more work into them. And they used to be kind of a wild animal, and they've kind of more turned into livestock or a pet, where you actually have to take care of them now. It used to be they just showed up, and it was like a bird feeder. They showed up, and you took honey off. Now you have to medicate them, and you have to feed them, and you have to take care of them much more than you used to, just to keep them alive. And even then, they don't stay alive.
Right, and with less genetic diversity out there, they can succumb a lot faster. Just like when you have all those elm trees out there and they succumb to the Dutch elm disease.
In the winter, what do you do with your hives?
Oh, beekeepers still get to play with them. Some people have
those. Do you take them indoors, or what do you do to protect them, is what I'm saying?
Well, if they're in a tree as a feral colony, you know, not much. A lot of days now, beekeepers have gone back to wrapping their hives to help insulate them from the weather. Some beekeepers put them in their sunrooms and then have pipes that lead out so that they can fly on warm days, but I don't know how well marriages survive that one. But you really can't get into your hives in the wintertime.
Let me take a call real quick from Angie and Powell. Hi, Angie. You're on the air.
Hello.
Angie?
I have a question about bumblebees.
Okay.
Hello?
Yeah, go ahead.
I have a bumblebee hive, I think, that wintered over in my play structure, and I don't mind. No one's playing in it. It's an older little fort. But my question is, so when they, I think there's been several, you know, kind of swarming around, and you said that the female survives.
Well, the female queen survives, but she should not. I mean, maybe they've recolonized the old nest, but a bumblebee colony will die every winter. So are these big bees that you're seeing? I mean, they're big and furry like a bumblebee.
Yeah, they're big and furry, and there's several of them, and it seems almost like there'll be two of them kind of flying around each other. I don't know what that means, if they're doing a little bee dance or what that is.
Reed just got a sparkle in his eye. What does that mean, Reed?
It sounds like carpenter bees to me. Mm-hmm. So the bumblebees are kind of furry.
What kind of bee?
Carpenter bees?
Carpenter.
They're the ones that drill holes in decks or in a play structure like this,
yeah,
or other wooden things. And they will come back every year. They're active this time of year.
Yes.
And you can tell the difference between a carpenter bee and a bumblebee in that carpenter bees have kind of a very smooth, waxy-looking abdomen.
Okay.
It's almost shiny, whereas bumblebees are much more furry. And the fact that carpenter bees like to live in wood, and bumblebees will generally nest in the ground.
Angie, you want to get rid of this? Are they bothering anybody?
Oh, no. In fact, I have a big raspberry patch and a peach tree, and I want these pollinators around.
Uh-huh.
I just need to know how to take care of them. But they are very big. Are carpenter bees the size of a quarter? Because these are huge bees.
They're like a battleship. They're huge.
Okay, so they could be carpenter bees then.
I don't
mind. They're very slow moving. When I'm picking raspberries, I've never been stung, but we kind of just do a little dance around each other.
All right.
But is there anything I need to do to make sure that they stay healthy?
I mean, you're providing the wood nest for them, and you got flowers for them. And those carpenter bees are excellent pollinators, so you should be happy to meet
them. All right.
Be happy to have them, and they'll get in your face, but I have never been stung by one. They're pretty gentle, actually.
Just noisy.
Yeah.
Okay, Angie, thanks for that call. And anyone else who's interested and has questions about bees or pollinators, I have an entomologist here who studies bees and other pollinators with the Bee Lab at Ohio State, Reed Johnson, and also with us, Terry Lieberman-Smith. She's a beekeeper and vice president of the Ohio State Beekeepers Association. The number to call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. You can check out our Facebook page, too, and post your question or comment there. And by the way, we are broadcasting live today from the grounds of the Chadwick Arboretum Plant Sale at the Ohio State University campus. It's right at Lane and Fred Taylor, right off the expressway. For more information, you can check out a link on our website at wosu.org/allsides. And if you're at the plant sale today and want to come and join us for a little while, drop in and take in some of the show. We'd love to meet you. Check it out. And you can also, if you have a question, we can take questions from the audience here as well. So do that. 614-292-8513. We'll be right back. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides. I'm your host, Ann Fisher. We're broadcasting today from the grounds of the Chadwick Arboretum Plant Sale at the Ohio State University campus, right at Lane Avenue and Fred Taylor Drive, right off the expressway. So check us out. For more information, go to the link at our website at wosu.org/allsides. It's a great day out here. It's going to be a beautiful weekend. They'll be here through tomorrow, so there's plenty of time. There's everything from herbs to succulents to flowers and hanging baskets and shrubs. I mean, there's just a million things to look at, and lots of other vendors as well, and a food truck, which smells really great.
Yum.
We'll be here until noon, so join us. Check out all the great plants. This hour, we're talking about bees and other pollinators and how they play a critical role in our environment. Still with us is Vice President of the Ohio State Beekeepers Association, Terry Lieberman-Smith, and also OSU entomologist Reed Johnson. Questions or comments, 614-292-8513. You know, as far as the bee species that are native to Ohio, are the honeybees that they're not? You're shaking your head.
Honeybees, they're known as the European honeybees. And while they may not be native to the United States, I think they're a lot more native than most of the population.
They're naturalized
in the United
now.
States. Right.
Right. Okay. All right. And Reed Johnson, how many species of bees there are out there?
There are about 400 species of bees here in Ohio.
Just in Ohio?
Yeah, there's 20,000 species of bees worldwide. So that's a very diverse group. Lots of different bees out there. Most of those bees are solitary, living by themselves somewhere.
Uh-huh.
Not in the colony like the honeybee does.
Right. Okay. And when we talk about plants that are good for bees. It could be anything from a cucumber plant to to a butterfly bush or whatever people happen to have in their yard.
Absolutely.
Anything with a flower on
Well, not anything. Bees do prefer some things more than others.
Okay.
Generally, you know, the highly bred petunias or something that you get that are have been
scentless.
Bred. Yeah, scentless things that have been bred for their beauty.
For their looks.
Generally, those aren't as good for pollinators because they have kind of bred out the nectar production, and maybe the bee can't even get in there anymore to get nectar if it's even there.
Coming up later on in the program, we're going to talk about what you can get. This is the time of year when you're buying your plants. It's Mother's Day weekend. This is a perfect time to start thinking about what do you get to attract bees and other pollinators. So we'll be talking about that later on in the show if you have any questions about that. Is there any good news?
There's lots of good news. I know. There's lots of good news. I mean, we as humans like to, you know, focus on the negative, but there is so much good news out there. People are becoming more aware of what they need to plant in their gardens. They're going to garden sales like this that have a huge variety of color and variety and scent to add to their gardens. They're letting the dandelions live. They are putting fresh water out, not stale, nasty water, but fresh water out in their bird baths. They're putting rocks in it so that butterflies and dragonflies and honeybees
can stop
they don't
as
know
well.
Exactly. Honeybees
right.
don't know they can't swim, and they will drown. Seriously, they will drown. There are the beekeeping clubs in our state have been growing by leaps and bounds, not only in new clubs coming up, but also in clubs growing in the number of members and working with the gardening groups to plant for pollinators. ODOT is planting native habitat along some roadsides in Chillicothe. They're testing this out because you can't just throw seeds out there and expect, you know, perfect results because grasses will compete with them. So mm-hmm. the management of those lands is different. You've got Reed Johnson's group doing massive amounts of research here back again at OSU, which is so important. Ohio State Beekeepers Association, because of course I have to mention that. Our website is www.ohiostatebeekeepers.org. We have free videos on there. We have podcasts. We have great information. We've worked with Ohio Prairie Nursery to develop a seed blend perfect for urban and suburban gardens, native plants. There's a honeybee license plate, and monies from that help go fund research and education. We have 4-H outreach. We have a diagnostic kit out there for new beekeepers, and the information is on our website. There's a pollinator week in June coming up, and it's going to be in 4 locations, at the Cleveland Botanical Gardens on June 17th, at the Crone Observatory in Cincinnati on June 18th, at Franklin Park Conservatory right here in Columbus area, June 24th, and at Allwood back in Dayton. So we're going to be covering the state with information, and also we'll have the honey queen there. And I know, but she is a great draw. And we're also going to have her at the Ohio State Fair at the OSBA Pavilion, which is for a whole week of education and outreach to the general public. So educating the public to plant for pollinators, read and heed the label on any chemicals they're going mm-hmm. to use in their yard. Lots of positive things going on.
Brad in Orient, you're on the air. Hi, yes. Brad.
Hi.
Go ahead.
Quick question, just what is the latest findings on the role of neonicotinoids in colony collapse? And then also if someone would talk about what someone should do when they find a swarm and how to call somebody to come and collect that swarm instead of an exterminator, perhaps.
Well, first of all, the neonicotinoids,
because that came up at our plant our herb event the other night. And what are neonicotinoids? They're like what they sound, right?
So neonicotinoids are insecticides, and they're based on the structure of nicotine. And tobacco plants tobacco plants produce nicotine to kill insects. And the chemists have modified nicotine to make these neonicotinoids to make it less toxic to humans and more toxic to insects. And they're very toxic to bees. I mean, they're among the most toxic of all insecticides to bees. But the relationship between the use of these insecticides and colony collapse disorder is really not clear. You can certainly kill some bees with these neonicotinoids, but whether that's the cause of all the problems we're having, I don't think that you can make a direct connection between the two. I think they're definitely killing bees in some situations, but I don't think we can blame all the trouble that bees are having on on this particular class of insecticides.
And then John and Powell, you're on the air. Hi, John.
Hi, I've got a, well, we've actually got a volunteer hive in a whiskey barrel in our front porch. And it's hive, I mean, it's swarm, so I've seen that. We now have a swarm sitting in on the ground, almost on the ground, in a large shrub in our front yard. And I'm wondering, how long can they last? My, all the reading I've done suggests that they swarm and find a new place in 3 to 4 days. But these have been hanging around
probably for... You have two swarms?
Oh, no, I'm sorry. The hive we currently have swarmed a month ago. And about a week ago, a new swarm showed up and is in our front yard. And I'm surprised that they're still hanging around because they're in a bush and the what I call the football is almost touching the ground. And
a swarm? I mean, I'm sorry. I mean that to Reed Johnson. John, first I want to talk about definitions. What do we mean by a swarm?
So a swarm, because honeybees live as a social unit, they can't. You can't just have one bee go out and found a new colony. They need a lot of bees to go form a new colony. So the an adult colony, a full-size colony, will split in half, and half of those bees will go with the old queen and form this football-shaped thing that you find hanging from a tree. And what they're doing right then is they're looking for a new nest, you know, a hollow tree or ideally a nest box or something that they can go move into. And so a swarm is just basically honeybee reproduction, but it's pretty spectacular if you have that football-sized ball of 10,000 bees hanging from a tree.
So Terry Lieberman-Smith, what should John and Powell do? Should he tell somebody about these swarms?
Absolutely. If he's not aware of a local beekeeping association, he can go to the OSBA website, and we have all the local associations listed, so he can contact a local association. Or on our page, we also have a swarm list where he can go click on that, click on the county he lives in, and it will list a whole bunch of beekeepers who are more than willing to come out and take those bees home where they belong, because those bees that are now in that bush could potentially find their way behind someone's siding or down someone's chimney, and then it's going to be expensive for the homeowner and probably not particularly good for the bees.
Right, right. Okay, John, thanks a lot for that call. We appreciate it. I want to turn to Amanda in Gahanna. Hi, Amanda.
Hello.
Go ahead.
So my question is, I know when people talk about beekeeping, and I appreciate all of the talk about native bees this morning, when people talk about beekeeping, they primarily focus on honeybees, not realizing that there is a host of pollinators that are available to them without purchasing bees and queens and all the equipment that goes along with honeybee keeping. I live in Gahanna, and we are now a pollinator-friendly city designated by our mayor, and I would love to know of just education or studies that are going on to look at the native bee populations. I have a mason bee colony at my house, and I would love to know more about those sorts of things going on to support native bees.
Reed Johnson?
So, I mean, there are a lot of researchers in this country and here in Ohio doing work on the native bees. I'm not one of them. Most of my work is actually on honeybees. But, I mean, there's a number of things you can do to encourage these other bee species if you don't want to be a honeybee keeper. You can, like the mason bees, you can put out the nesting blocks for those mason bees. Or you can, you know, leave areas in the ground without kind of bare soil, and you can get some of these ground nesting bees moving in there as well. So you can be a beekeeper without actually having to go the whole way to keep honeybees.
Okay. Let's see. Gwen in Vienna, you're on the air. Hi, Gwen.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I have a question, wondering if either of you could identify a bee by its behavior. Years ago, my son was young, and he was mowing, ran the mower up into a wood shed. So this bee came after him. We don't know if it came out of the wood or came out of the ground. And this thing chased him around our entire lot and then started coming around, chasing him. And then my son just made a beeline. He dove into the garage, and the bee just kept going straight, so he got away from it. And
originally we were told it was probably a carpenter bee. It was fat like a bumblebee, but they aren't that aggressive, are they?
No, they're not. What time of year was this?
It probably was summer because we were mowing.
Cicada kill?
I mean, it could be some kind
like
of...
Like a cicada killer?
Well, what's a cicada killer? Is that a kind of a bee?
Well, it's like a hornet.
It's huge.
Yeah.
It's huge and it's noisy.
I'll tell you what else happened. I forgot this part. So he was, when this bee came and flew over me, this, I wouldn't believe it if I didn't see this. It like dropped yellow stuff on me, got on my shorts. And so the bees started coming. There was more coming. Like, I don't know if that's some sort of a signal or something. And I got stung like 7 times right there on my thigh. I ended up dropping the shorts and running in the house, and they swarmed over that thing for a while.
Right. Well, a honeybee can only sting once.
Okay,
and
so
then
it wasn't
it
a honeybee.
Dies.
We know that.
Right.
Okay. Reed, is this ringing any bells?
Well, when I hear of things like this, my first thought is always yellow jackets, because yellow jackets can be extremely aggressive, and they will sting people for no reason, just like often while mowing.
Exactly.
Exactly like this. And yellow jackets nest in the ground, and they get especially nasty in like August and September when they kind of start, the colony starts falling apart in preparation for winter, and they get kind of at loose ends and
grouchy.
End up stinging people. Yeah, they get grouchy and start stinging people a lot. So my suspicion is it might even be yellow jackets. Those are they look about the same size as a honeybee, and they're yellow and black, but they're really very smooth. They don't have the hairs like a honeybee does, and they're really foul tempered. I don't like them.
Especially with the lawnmower going over them.
All right, Gwen, thanks a lot for that call. You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News, and Harold in Columbus, you're on the air. Hi, Harold.
Hi there. Thank you for having this program in. I wanted to ask about urban beekeeping and the spraying that goes on for mosquitoes. My bees would swarm, and it would generally be later in the summer, and it was around the time after they would spray. And so I was kind of curious about any recorded correlation between urban beekeepers having a problem with the mosquito spraying and swarming and then having problems with their hives. If you could talk about that a little bit.
Jerry Lieberman-Smith, you guys are looking at each other.
Well, I don't know if there's been any specific correlation. I do know that when... In the newspapers, they usually announce when the spraying is going to be, and it's usually during a specific time of day, especially in my area. Beekeepers will screen their bees in to prevent them from getting into whatever they're spraying until it has a chance to dry. I don't know about Columbus and whether they announce it ahead of time or not. And the swarming, I personally have not been aware of that. This could be something that is happening and no one's talking about it, which is unusual. In the beekeeping community, we talk about everything. But it's something to keep an eye on. I don't know, Reed, have you heard of any of this going on in...
Reed Johnson?
No, I've never heard of bees swarming in response to insecticide exposure like that. I mean, you'd expect to see maybe a bee kill, but not... Swarming would be a strange response.
Have you ever, is there ever anyone that finds a bee kill where swarm has, or a beehive has collapsed and they're collapsed in place?
Yes.
Okay.
Ooh, yes. Yeah.
That's pretty sad.
That is, it's horrific for the bees. It's horrific for the beekeepers. There was a kill last year up towards the lake. And I think Reed was called in on that.
Yeah, it was related to these neonicotinoids. It was, the corn that is planted in Ohio and around the U.S. has a neonicotinoid insecticide coated on top of the corn seed. And
is there genetically engineered?
Yeah, well, this is a separate thing.
Gotcha.
It's got this insecticide on the outside then chips off as it's going through these pneumatic planters and produces this very fine dust, insecticidal dust, that the bees get into. And there was a beekeeper up north of here who had a pretty substantial bee kill in response to corn planting, of all things. And... So it does happen.
Right. And sometimes the whole structure that the bees live in is damaged, is contaminated, and any new bees you put into it would perish. So sometimes everything has to go. It's not just the livestock, but it's also their homes.
We are broadcasting today from the grounds of the Chadwick Arboretum plant sale at the OSU campus, right at Lane Avenue and Fred Taylor Drive, right off the 315. So if you want to check us out, we need 300 more people here, apparently, right now. 300 more people right now. It's great outside. It's in the high 50s. There's no rain. It's lovely. So check it out. And tomorrow it's going to be beautiful. They're here through tomorrow. Check it out. Go to the link on our website at WOSU.org/allsides, and you can learn more about the sale. We're talking about bees and other pollinators this hour. Next hour we're going to talk about plants. What a thought. So give us a call if you have a question about bees or pollinators, 614-292-8513. You can email us at allsides@wosu.org. You can also check out our Facebook page and post your question or comment there. There's only one call waiting right now on the line. So if you want to give us a call, 614-292-8513. I have two experts, Terry Lieberman-Smith, beekeeper and vice president of the Ohio State Beekeepers Association, and Reed Johnson, OSU entomologist. He studies bees and other pollinators with the Bee Lab at OSU. We'll be right back. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides with Ann Fisher. We are broadcasting from the grounds of the Chadwick Arboretum plant sale at the OSU campus. Check out the link on our website at WOSU.org/allsides. For more information, there'll be a map there. It'll tell you how to get there. It'll tell you more about all the different species of plants that are available today. It's just pretty much runs the gamut. As I was told by Mary Maloney, the executive director of Chadwick Arboretum a few minutes ago, they need about 300 more people. This is perfect shopping day. Mm-hmm. If you have time to drop by, there's beautiful plantings for mothers-in-law. I get my hanging for my mother-in-law every year, my hanging plant from here, so hopefully there's one left by the time I'm done. All kinds of things to buy, perennials, annuals, herbs, shrubs, trees, you name it.
And the parking is really easy.
And the parking is free and very, very easy. You just heard the voice of Terry Lieberman-Smith. She's a beekeeper and vice president of the Ohio State Beekeepers Association. She's on the show right now because we're talking about pollinators.
Yay.
Also with us is Reed Johnson. He's an entomologist who studies bees and other pollinators at the Bee Lab at OSU. Questions or comments, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. And Aaron in Columbus, you're on the air. Hi, Aaron.
Hey.
Hello. Hi.
Call.
Sure.
I had a question about how to prevent bees in a way that's safe for the bees. We're going to be building, I wanted to build a clubhouse in the backyard.
For your kids?
For my kids, yeah. And we were just going to get some pallets, plywood, and kind of see if we could make something that stays up.
Uh-huh.
But it's back, you know, in between some bushes and stuff. And I was just wondering, you know, it would be a good nesting place, but I don't really want anything nesting there. Is there a way to prevent that?
Without hurting them. Yeah, Reed Johnson?
Well, I mean, I think you just want to make sure that there's no, like, cavity inside which the bees could get inside. And, I mean, there's no entrance. I mean, that's one of the best ways to keep bees out is to make sure there's no holes that the bees could get into a cavity behind where they would. You don't want anything that's like a hollow tree, which is what the bees are really looking for, is a hollow area with a small entrance.
Which is why we were looking at pictures of bees in walls mm-hmm. of dwellings, human
right.
dwellings,
mm-hmm.
unfortunately, because that's like a hollow tree to them.
Right. I've removed bees from a tailpipe of a
SUV.
The gentleman had parked at an arena to go in and see a concert, and when he came out, you know, it's dark, it's... You know,
kind of
safe.
Warm, maybe.
It's kind of still slightly warm, you know, and he was just very. It was
seemed
always
like a good idea.
Exactly,
at the
it seemed
time.
Like a good idea at the time, but the car owner was not happy.
And so there was a swarm.
There
around.
Was a swarm.
Oh,
yep. Had to get the swarm out of there.
Okay, Aaron. So no cracks, no holes. Don't make it like a hollow tree, and you should be good to go. Now I'm turning to Trevor because we want to get to this topic, and Trevor wants to bring it up. Hi, Trevor. You're on the air.
Hi. Hi, how you doing?
Good.
Thanks for taking my call. My question today is there a way that you can attract certain pollinators other than, like, carpenter bees? My personal favorite, I love watching the bees, and I have lots of butterflies that swarm around here. I'm really close to Franklin Park as well. And so my husband absolutely hates carpenter bees, and every time they come around, he starts, he kills a lot of them a lot of the time. So I'm trying to just try to deter them from even coming here. Is there a way to do that?
Well, the carpenter bees will come. I mean, the young are actually inside that wood, and they spend the rest of the year in there, and then they will emerge from that hole that their parent built the previous year and will build a new hole in the same area. So you can build up large populations year after year. So the way to prevent them is to just take some caulk and cover that hole so that the
bees,
they can't come out the next year, and then you can control them that way.
Okay. All right, Trevor, thanks a lot for that call. Here's an interesting question. Dean in Columbus, you're on the air. Hi, Dean.
How you doing? Listen,
good.
I'm not a beekeeper or anything, but I love animals. I was watching a program on a nature show, and there were these bees, like, I guess they look like yellow jackets. Anyway, they attacked this honeybee hive, and they just went in and they just mercilessly murdered all the bees. It was gory. And they killed them not for the honey, but to take their larva. Is there something like that in Ohio?
Reed Johnson?
Thankfully, not yet. This is an Asian hornet that will go in.
They have a Mimidina.
Well, people keep saying they see them, but there's another species that looks very, very similar that we do have here.
Clones.
But they were imported into Europe, and now they're having to deal with these Asian hornets in Europe.
They are shooting for the larva.
Yeah, well, they will eat the
protein.
The bees, yeah. And the Asian bees, they will actually ball these hornets and heat them. They'll cook them to death in this ball of bees. But our European bees don't have this adaptation to cook these hornets that way. Yeah, so hopefully they stay away from North America.
Okay, so are there predators like that, anything like that in Ohio?
Mm-hmm.
There are things that will eat bees. I'd say skunks are the top of the list, actually.
Really?
Oh, yeah. The skunks apparently don't mind getting stung, and they'll scratch at the entrance of a mm-hmm. colony, and bees will come out to sting them, and they'll just eat them.
Yep. They have guard bees, and skunks will come out, scratch the landing board, and the bees will come out to guard, and they'll eat them, and then they'll just keep doing that, and a family of skunks can decimate a population. But there are wasps up in Medina and closer to the lake that we've had reports are just doing horrible things to the colonies, to the bee colonies there.
Huh.
Don't have them down in the Dayton area where I live yet, but we do have yellow jackets. Yellow jackets like to come in, especially in the fall, and go after the colonies. And if you have a weak colony, they just can't protect themselves, and there will be fighting and death, and they're looking for protein because wasps are carnivores.
Katie in Columbus,
yes.
You're on the air. Hi, Katie.
Hi, how are you?
I'm good, thanks. How are you?
Good, thanks. I had a question about, I'd like to create a bee habitat in our backyard. But we've got these little invasive, little yellow plants. I think they're called lesser celandine or something. They look like little yellow buttercups. They're pretty,
yeah.
But they crowd out all of the plants that I would like to make bee
right.
habitat with.
Mm-hmm.
So my neighbors are all telling me to use Roundup.
Ooh.
I wonder if that's counterproductive.
Bunch of people cringed.
Oh.
But Reed just shrugged his shoulders. So what about Roundup? Does that hurt bees?
Well, I mean, it hurts bees if you're killing a plant that the bees are using,
gotcha.
Because then it's the one less flower. But I don't think the bees use these.
Lesser celandines?
Yeah, I mean, if you can replace that with something better for the bees, then I think that the use of Roundup would be justified.
Right. Well, you could solarize your ground if you put down clear plastic, not the black plastic, but clear plastic, and let the sun cook the ground. I don't know exactly how long because I'm not a gardener, I'm a beekeeper.
Yeah.
But I know beekeepers, when they go for planting native habitat, will put down clear plastic, solarize it so that it kills all of the weeds and the seeds there, and then you can plant whatever you want. If you don't want to go the Roundup way, if you have a well or septic, if you're using your own groundwater, you might want to be a little more careful about that.
Okay. Katie? Thanks a lot for that call. And now we go to Christy in Gahanna. Hi, Christy.
Hey there, guys.
Hi.
So we are new beekeepers. We have two colonies. We just set up Action Earth Day. And the area that we have them in, we want to turn into a native sort of prairie area. So it's looking for some tips. So when we come down later on plants and good pollinating flowers, we should install in that area.
And do you have a question?
Yeah, we are going to be installing a native fairy habitat as our goal around the area where we have two new hives. And I was looking for some tips on plants that we could look at when we come down to the sale later this afternoon.
All righty then. Mm-hmm. Christy and Gehanna, thanks for that call. What to start up, you know, what do they want? What do those new hives want?
When I give presentations to garden groups, I usually say, you know, think of CVS, and we're not talking the drugstore. We're talking color, variety, and scent. You want something that will be blooming in the spring, the summer, and especially the fall. So you want diversity in the season. You want diversity within each season. As Reed was saying earlier, the pollenless, scentless sweet peas, or even the pollenless sunflowers. Bees love sunflowers, but they've come out with like the teddy bear type.
Yeah.
And not so much for the honeybees. You want the ones that actually have lots of seeds.
Okay.
So I was browsing here. There are lots of gorgeous plants. I think some sedums.
There's goldenrod
goldenrod.
They like that?
Absolutely, especially in the fall. Mm-hmm. I think there are some sedums that are coming home with me. I don't know that those are necessarily native, but my honeybees just love them. So I would say contact one of the people who are wearing the OSU red here, and they can help point out other plants for you. The one thing I would suggest, though, is that if you do have grasses in your area, grasses will overtake the native plants unless you keep them at bay for a while, because they can crowd them out. But if you get your native plants in and get them growing, they will shade out some of the grasses.
Okay. Reed Jensen?
I just wanted to repeat the point that fall blooming things are really important. And in the studies we've done, bees are okay in the spring. There's lots of stuff blooming in the spring. Summer is okay, but fall is a critical period because they need to collect that honey that they're going to need to survive the winter.
So I mentioned goldenrod is a good one.
Goldenrod is
critical. Purple, like any of the asters, those are good, I guess. And then what about like mums and that kind of a thing? Because those are big fall bloomers, but I don't know if they have any nectar.
I have not really seen my bees on those. My bees like the zinnias.
Zinnias
work pretty well. And when I plant herbs, my bees love the herbs. When I plant herb plants, it's like one for me, three for them, because you do want them to go into flower.
But those usually flower in the spring.
Spring, if you've
fall?
Like spring through most of the season, but you've got the echinacea, you've got the brown-eyed Susans. Sometimes the clovers
cone
do come
flowers.
Back. The cone flowers are great.
Cosmos, zinnias, any of the annual, you know, the receding annual type wildflowers or whatever we're talking about.
Right.
Okay, Christy, I hope that helps. Thanks for that call. One thing we wanted to talk about very briefly, we were talking about it off the air, and I think we forget sometimes what we talked about off the air. You find a swarm, what do you do? If you call a pest control place, they aren't going to come by and help you anymore. They're going to tell you to do what?
They're going to tell you to call a beekeeper.
Is that the law? Or is it just good practice now?
It's more good practice. Okay. If the bees are in an area that is dangerous to humans and pest control companies can take care of it.
Okay.
They prefer not to because it can be a PR nightmare. And also, when a beekeeper, if you have bees in your walls, it's not just killing the bees. It would be preferable to remove the bees because then you also have the wax and the honey. And if you just leave that there, the bees keep it at a certain temperature and a certain environment. And if it gets too hot in there, you know, wax is like a candle. It will melt. And then you have melted wax and melted honey. So if you see bees on a picnic table or hanging from a tree, it's always best to get a beekeeper there as soon as possible.
And we're going to have a link to the Ohio State Beekeepers Association on our website at wosu.org/allsides.
Once again, go to the swarm list, click on your county, and it will pop up with beekeepers in your area. They will come take those bees before they become a problem for somebody else, or, you know, some kids spray them with pesticides, or, you know, don't spray them with pesticides. Don't spray them with a hose. You know, call a beekeeper before you do any of that.
Terry Lieberman-Smith, thank you so much for joining us today.
You're welcome. Thank you so much for having
me. Terry Lieberman-Smith, she is a beekeeper and vice president of the Ohio State Beekeepers Association. Again, we'll have that link on our website at WOSU.org/allsides. And Reed Johnson, thanks again for joining us this year. Appreciate your time.
Thanks. Great to be here.
Reed Johnson, entomologist. He studies bees and other pollinators with the Bee Lab at OSU, which is where we are today. Join us. We have another hour coming up at the Chadwick Arboretum Annual Plant Sale. You've been listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.